Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Biden's budget for 2023, what it means for workers and for the super rich. Today on the show, we're going into the labor lab to track union busters, and later we check in with AFGE District 3. Welcome to the Tuesday, March 29th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on a number of platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and the platform known as Stitcher. We have two guests on the show today. Bob Funk is going to be our first guest. He's a newcomer. He is a third-generation union member who specializes in communications. And what he has done, he has set up what is called Labor Lab. Here's the website, laborlab.com. .us and Labor Lab has launched the largest and most comprehensive union busting tracking system on the internet. That's right. As he put it, we believe light is the best disinfectant, and it's time to shine a big old light on the union busting industry. And if you've done any research on the union busting industry, it's pretty darn big. Billions and billions and billions of dollars every year major corporations spend to bust unions, to stop unions. Look what Amazon is doing. I mean, they've been doing it in various parts of the country. What we're going to get into is the filings. They are called LM20 filings with the Department of Labor. And Labor Lab is the only nonprofit watchdog organization that brings attention to these filings on a daily basis. And he points out that union busters are notorious for filing those LM20s very late or not at all. And the problem is the Department of Labor needs to start penalizing them. And he's going to get into details on all of this. Again, the website, laborlab.us. They're based in Montana. And there's a lot of good information on that website. Two things I want to call attention to. Section 7 and Section 8 of the National Labor Relations Act. And Section 7 talks about the rights of workers to collectively organize together. You have rights. Don't let your boss tell you you don't have rights. It's all clarified in Section 7. And then Section 8, it explains knowing your rights in the workplace is essential to prevent the exploitation by employers and to improve your working conditions. And it spells it all out on, like, employer interference with workers' rights. And that goes on a daily basis. So a lot of good information in there. So Bob is going to be our first guest. Later, Phil Glover will be joining us on behalf of one of our national sponsors. That would be the American Federation of Government Employees, and he covers District 3. They have about 31,000 members, 53 locals in that district. That district covers Delaware and Pennsylvania. We're going to talk about the Federal Workforce, the Mission Act of 2018, what that's all about, and staffing. So one of the issues, and I don't know if he's going to get into it on the show, is the VA's realignment plan. We talked about this in our last session with the American Federation of Government Employees. And essentially, here's what's going on. The Department of Veterans Affairs Secretary Dennis McDonough made public a plan for revamping a vast collection of health care facilities throughout the country. And they're actually talking about closing and tearing down a number of medical centers, building some new ones, and then establishing outpatient centers and moving more care to the private sector. That's a no-go. Sorry. You cannot privatize what the VA does. Maybe some parts of it have been privatized. And a lot of those, I would imagine there's some successes, but most of them are failures. It's not the direction to go. The VA is just one heck of an organization that cannot be replaced in the private sector. So Phil Glover will be our second guest on the show. Well, the Biden-Harris administration yesterday released the president's fiscal year 2023 budget. And we're just going to narrow. I mean, there's a lot of components to it, but I want to talk about how it's going to protect workers. And we got a comment here from our Labor Secretary, Marty Walsh. He says the budget request of $14.6 billion in discretionary resources in the Department of Labor is an explicit value statement on empowering workers morning, noon, and night. He said it calls for investments in the foundations of our country's strength, our workers, their families, and their communities. And the budget delivers on the heart of the president's economic agenda, seeks to advance equity and harnesses our economy to lift our people toward good middle-class jobs. And you know what? That's all we want. Good middle-class jobs. Some details here. Number one, empower and protect workers to ensure employers treat workers with dignity and respect. The request invests $2.2 billion, which is an increase of almost $400 million over last year, in the department's worker protection agencies. This will enable the department to conduct the enforcement and regulatory work needed to ensure workers' wages and benefits are protected, and to improve workplace health and safety. It also restores resources to oversee and enforce the equal employment obligations of federal contractors, including protections against discrimination based on race, gender, disability, gender identity, and sexual orientation. That's one of them. The other, equip workers with the skills they need to obtain high-quality jobs. This is very, very important. The budget invests in effective, evidence-based training models to equip workers with the skills they need to obtain high-quality jobs by requesting $303 million to expand registered apprenticeship opportunities while increasing access for historically underrepresented groups. Community colleges play a critical role in providing accessible, low-cost, high-quality training. So the budget calls for $100 million to build their capacity to work with the public workforce development system and employers to design and deliver high-quality training for in-demand jobs. We have another here. Improve access and equity in the unemployment insurance system. Unemployment insurance benefits helped over 53 million workers who lost their jobs through no fault of their own and put some $870 billion back into the economy during the pandemic. Well, this budget invest $3.4 billion to modernize, protect, and strengthen that program. And there's more. There's another here. Strengthen mental health parity protections, requiring all health plans to cover mental health benefits, ensures that plans have an adequate network of behavioral health providers, and improves the department's ability to enforce the law. That's a big issue today. There's about one out of five people, and this is real prevalent in the trades. About one out of five suffer from some mental disorder. And you think about what's going on in the world. We've got war. We've got a pandemic. People changing their jobs. I mean, there's a lot of anxiety out there right now. So that is just a snapshot of Biden's budget as to how it affects workers in America. Now, how far will this go? Well, you know the politics. Now, there's another component in Biden's budget, and that is a wealth tax on the super rich. It's called the billionaire minimum income tax. The tax would stipulate that households worth more than $100 million pay a rate of at least 20% on their income, as well as unrealized gains in the value of their liquid assets. And that includes stocks and bonds which are otherwise taxed only when they're sold. The proposal would only apply to the top 100th of 1% of U.S. households, with over half the revenue predicted to come from individuals worth more than $1 billion. Now, I don't know how far that one's going to go, because I know some Democrats who are obviously not in that category but are catering to that category. There's going to be some pushback on that one. In fact, the Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has noted that a wealth tax would pose very difficult implementation problems, and various others have argued that a wealth tax, even if approved by Congress, could face a constitutional challenge. And one more here before we break. The campaign to organize workers at Google's parent company, Alphabet Inc., notched its first victory on Friday when the workers at Google Fiber voted 10-1 to join the Alphabet Workers Union, AWU, which is affiliated with the Communication Workers of America. The workers are directly employed not by Alphabet, but by BDS Connected Solutions, a staffing subcontractor based in Kansas City. So congratulations to the workers at Alphabet Inc. All right, quick break. When we come back, the Labor Lab with Bob Funk, back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialist, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And of course, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to Helena, Montana right now. Joining us on our live line is Bob Funk. Bob is with an organization called Labor Lab. Website is laborlab.us. He's a third-generation union member, belongs to the Montana Federation of Public Employees, which is affiliated with the American Federation of Teachers and the National Education Association. And he's been involved in lockouts, unprecedented victories over right to work, and I think we should start right there. Bob, it's my understanding that you and your brothers and sisters in labor are responsible for defeating a right to work push in the state of Montana. So I have to thank you for that, and welcome to America's Workforce. How about we start right there? How's that sound?
That sounds great. Thank you so much for having me on. Big fan. In Montana, we have a very deep and long labor history. I mean, called the Gibraltar of labor at the turn of the 20th century. And that commitment to the freedom to join together, the right to unionize, is still very, very strong in this big, beautiful state. And despite some radicals taking over both the state House and state Senate, and the first Republican governor we've had in 16 years in Montana, we managed to beat back every single one of their anti-union bills. There were five major ones, and that was because of unprecedented level of member engagement that happened here. One of my favorite photos from the entire session was a massive crowd of union members juxtaposed with the two lobbyists that had been flown in from the National Right to Work Foundation. So two versus hundreds and hundreds of Montanans that showed up, the number of postcards that were sent in, the number of phone calls that were made, the door knocking that happened. And in the middle of a pandemic, it was truly inspiring and one of the most significant battles I've been fortunate to be a member of. And it was big. It was really big.
It's certainly good to hear it. And I can recall, and you probably heard about an effort in the state of Ohio, and that's where we record the show. Actually, we recorded Monday through Friday at Iron Workers Local 17 near downtown Cleveland, Ohio, and SB5, they called it, and we're going back to 2011. And they did not realize the power of unions in the state of Ohio, and they delivered well over a million signatures to repeal that. And then Governor Kasich, he said, well, you know what? I didn't realize what I signed into law. And to this day, he said, okay, I'm not going to mess with the unions. Now, he's not governor anymore, but it definitely sent a message. But that still doesn't stop him. I would imagine there's some lawmakers over there in Montana that are still trying to reintroduce that, right?
Oh, absolutely. This is the farthest it had ever made it in the Montana legislature. It made it to the House floor before it died. You know, a coalition of responsible Republicans and Democrats killed it. We even had a Republican on the Senate floor say, I don't understand why I would ever vote against someone's freedom to be in a union, which means that the work that our members did contacting them paid off. And they understand that this is an American freedom. It is a right and it needs to be protected. But there's a fringe out there. They're obviously the minority. You've seen the national polling, the state polling. Most Americans support unions. Most Americans want to be in a union, but that doesn't stop a fringe group from using their influence in the state legislature to try to limit or eliminate those rights.
So 60 million, I believe.
Yes.
60 million, I believe. 60 million people would join a union if they had the opportunity. And hopefully, if they change the laws in America, and I'm talking about the PRO Act, that would happen. There's no doubt about it. Bob, I want to talk about your organization, Labor Lab. Again, the website is laborlab.us. And I understand you just launched what's termed the largest and most comprehensive union busting tracking system on the web. So I want to get into that, but Labor Lab, talk to me how that started. What's that all about?
So there were a group of us, you know, our brothers and sisters all over the country, it's not just in Montana, are fighting for the right to join together. And as you stated, 60 million of our fellow Americans want to be in a union. So why aren't they? We think it's because despite the law being incredibly clear, you know, you don't have to be a legal expert to read the National Labor Relations Act and say everyone has the right to join a union. Despite the law being incredibly clear, there's been an entire industry that's been built around eliminating and limiting those rights. And the people that are members of that industry, and of course I'm talking about the union busting industry, are greedy con artists and callous bullies. And we think that the best way to bring attention to them is by putting a light on them. When you put a light on con artists, when you expose bullies, they usually lose. Unfortunately, in the United States, our laws are not great at accountability, and the accountability laws that we do currently have are not very well enforced. So we launched this organization to, one, spell it out incredibly easily what your right is to join a union, how you can get started, but then We think that we can be part of the solution in bringing accountability to this multi-million dollar industry that has one goal, and that is to deny us the rights that we are guaranteed in federal law, and I'd argue in the U.S. Constitution.
Okay, let's get into the details here on what you do to essentially track union busting activities. And I know this is a multi-billion dollar industry in America. There's companies that would pay exorbitant amount of money, an exorbitant amount of money to bust union. I mean, we're seeing it happen with Amazon. I mean, there's a good example there. There's a company that's hell-bent on destroying unions. Tesla is another example. Starbucks fighting, even though they're not winning that. But talk to me about this tracking that you're able to put together.
Yeah, so the example that you just gave with Amazon, as of today, in the last year, we know that they've spent, we know, and I want to emphasize that what we know is that they have spent about $500,000 in the latest report on union busting. But that is a fraction of the union busting that exists in the United States. Because under the current law or interpretation of the law, union busters only need to report to the Department of Labor if they meet face-to-face with employees in captive audience meetings or three-on-one management versus worker meetings. That's all that needs to be reported. And that is a fraction of what goes on in union busting efforts. In fact, it's been estimated that it's probably less than 10% of how active the union busting industry is. And to put that into context, it's called the advice exception, and it's a massive, massive loophole that you could drive semi trucks through. And in fact, they do, where basically everything that the anti-union consultants do falls under advice. So whether they are writing speeches for management, whether they are training management, if they're building flyers, if they're sending out the text messages like all of those workers in Starbucks are facing, all of that doesn't have to be reported to the Department of Labor. So what we do is analyze the information that we do have access to, and those are filings with the Department of Labor. And we track that on a map, and we put reports out on a daily basis. We also bring attention to the fact that the union busting industry is notorious for just flaunting the law, and they won't even file with the Department of Labor, even if they are having that fraction of their work, even if they are doing that one section that is supposed to be reported. Sometimes they just say, heck with it, and don't even file it. We bring attention to that. In fact, today we put up a post about a anti-union consultant who in two occasions in the last 6 months failed to file their paperwork. So that's one aspect, because we really think that there needs to be some accountability to the very little bit of transparency that exists. So we have an amazing group, listserv activists and people that will help bring attention to the union busting efforts. In addition to that, we work with union organizers, folks that are the workers in the actual shops that can report to us union busting activities that aren't being reported to the Department of Labor, and we can bring attention to them. You know, there are some big examples, like Littler being hired by Starbucks, and they're union busters. They're not reporting with the Department of Labor, but they sure as heck are union busting, because they are putting together the legal strategy to try to delay all these Starbucks elections. That is not the exception to the norm. That is the norm. It's happening at every level of the American economy. And that's one aspect that we do is people can – we work with those organizers to bring attention to stuff that isn't even filed with the Department of Labor. And God bless the people that do work at the Department of Labor, but it's not very accessible, the records that are provided there. And so we try to make it much more accessible, and then also act as a bullhorn so that the public is aware of whether or not an employer is hiring union busters in their community, in their state, you know, or in jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm. Bob, this is good stuff. We're speaking with Bob Funk. Bob is with Labor Lab. Laborlab.us is their website. And he's bringing a lot to the table here because what he's essentially doing, what his organization is doing, is watching over the union busters. Bob, in the next segment, I want to talk about what our Labor Department is doing or trying to do. You know, we got a good guy there with Marty Walsh. Hopefully we can tighten the screws here a little bit. Bob Funk on our live line. We'll be back right after this.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers. Standing strong and fighting for what's right.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
Hey, don't forget you can check us out on 6 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and the platform Stitcher. When you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. 5-star ratings are always appreciated. Let's go back to Helena, Montana. Joining us today is Bob Funk. Bob, about a year ago, put together Labor Lab. Website is laborlab.us, and they recently launched the largest and most comprehensive union busting tracking system on the web. Now, Bob, I just want to go over what we covered here. You bring attention to what's going on, and if a company or a law firm, usually it's a law firm, does union busting, they are supposed to file a report. I see it's called an LM-20, and you're indicating that many of them are notorious for not filing these reports. Now, what's the penalties here? Are they able to skirt those penalties? Can you fill me in on that, Bob?
Yeah, so LM-20s are under the Labor Management Reporting Act, Disclosure Act, excuse me. LM-20s are what the union busting industry is supposed to file within 30 days of being hired by an employer to begin intimidating and bullying workers. What we're seeing over and over again is that either the union busters don't even file it in the first place, or if they do, they do it at their convenience six months down the road. Today, we just looked at two examples of a union buster that was very late on their filings. And why that matters is the entire point of the act was to make it so the public and workers are aware when an employer hires a union buster to do their dirty work. Well, it's a little too late if the paperwork's filed 6 months later. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the penalties from the Department of Labor right now are very, very limited. And you know this with the NLRA. I mean, that's why we need to pass the PRO Act so that there are actual financial penalties for unfair labor practices, et cetera. The same thing needs to be happening with Department of Labor. But at this point, the Department of Labor will only pursue action, and it's basically a civil case, if there is overwhelming evidence that it was intentional and it was intended to be abusive. Again, the only reason that's going to ever happen is if there's public pressure on the department to go after these folks, and if the Department of Labor actually has the resources it needs to do the job it was created to do.
So with Marty Walsh at the helm at the Labor Department, is he aware of what's going on? I would imagine he's aware of what's going on. And is he planning to do anything about this to tighten the screws a bit?
Absolutely. And I just want to be clear. The folks that do the work at the Department of Labor are doing God's work, and they're under-resourced. And this is literally probably the best Department of Labor we've had in recent history, and they are doing a great job. Unfortunately, you know, they're under resourced. They did launch a page on their website where you can report union busting activities happening in your workplace that haven't been registered with the Department of Labor. And, you know, they did a little public relations around it to try to get some awareness around it. Unfortunately, you know, there aren't that many people that are paying great deal of attention to it. I think the bigger issue that the Department of Labor, and we know they're looking at it, but we need to move on it, is the fact that at the end of the Obama administration in 2016, that massive loophole that we were talking about earlier that allows union busters to term everything they do as advice and not actual persuasion, allows them to, that's why over 90% of the industry, we have no idea what they're doing, because there's no accountability, there's no reporting, and they don't have to follow the rules, which was the entire point of the Disclosure Act, was to make it so the public and workers know when union busters have been engaged to try to limit or eliminate their rights. Anyway, the Obama administration in 2016, the Department of Labor created the persuader rule, which expanded the definition of persuasion, which basically would include if you hire a fancy lawyer to slow down a union drive, which is union busting, or you hire a firm to spy on your workers, which is illegal, but union busting. And we've seen that happen across the board. Or if you hire a firm to write your text messages and flyers and speeches like Starbucks has done, you actually have to report that. Then, of course, and we know that this is a powerful tool because the business community, corporate America, lost its mind and filed lawsuits everywhere to try to stop the rule from coming into place, which the rule is simply trying to implement the original intent of the Disclosure Act. There was an injunction put on, and then President Trump became president, and Department of Labor's view of workers' rights changed dramatically, and that rule went away. We do desperately need this accountability over the union busting industry, and that's why it's included in the PRO Act. As you know where we are with the PRO Act right now, but this is something that the Department of Labor could do a rule change on. Obviously, it will get litigated again by the business community, but if you look at the original intent of the Disclosure Act that was passed in 1959, it's very clear that the persuasion rule is not supposed to just be about captive audience meetings, which I won't even get into at this moment, but love what I'm seeing in Connecticut where they're trying to make those illegal. Thank God. Talk about freedom. You shouldn't have to go into a meeting where they shove propaganda down your throat. But
right.
That's one step that we can do. One part of the PRO Act that we could put into place and really shine some light onto the union busting industry.
We just want to play fair. That's the bottom line. And you know that as well as I, that when there's a neutrality agreement, you will see so many people go to the side of unions when companies decide to remain neutral. But when those union busters come in, look out, everything changes. The dynamics change. Bob, I have a question here. When did you launch this tracking of union busting activities? And I'm wondering, maybe you can give us some analysis. I'm sure you've been checking the data, the analytics. Are people clicking on it? Are they starting to understand what's going on?
Absolutely. I mean, once we launched the union busing tracker is when Labor Lab really started to take off. The interest, people in this country care about accountability. They care about transparency. And that's what we're trying to offer through these multiple maps. We're working with some great people to scrape PDFs that are in files at the Department of Labor and putting them in an easily digestible way. The traffic to our union busing tracker is day after day the most traffic we get. Additionally, our information on unfair labor practices, how to file an unfair labor practice, what kind of tactics union busters use, we've seen a huge jump in that. Because I think one thing that we're seeing with the amazing people in the Starbucks drive is that they are informed not only of their rights, but also about the tactics they're about to face from corporate and the union busters they've hired. And I think that's why we've seen such an organic jump in this. People want to know, when I start my work, when I start my organizing work, what kind of dirty tricks is my boss or their union buster that they hired going to use against me?
You know, I just thinking back to the Volkswagen drive back in Chattanooga, Tennessee. It was in 2014.
Oh,
Volkswagen.
Yeah.
Remember that? They wanted to engage the union. Here's a company that wanted the union. The state of Tennessee did everything possible. They brought in all the union busters, the politicians that go along with those union busters. And the first thing that came out of their mouths was, oh, the jobs are going to go to Mexico. Wait a minute. VW went there. They wanted to be in Tennessee. Oh, it's just amazing. It's amazing extent they'll go to, you know?
It was horrifying. I'll tell you, my lovely wife is actually from Chattanooga, Tennessee. So we were down there visiting family in the height of it. And it was gross and pretty horrifying, the amount of anti-union propaganda everywhere you turned. And from the state, talk about bringing in a third party, interfering these extreme right-wing politics, interfering with a worker's right to establish a fair relationship with their employer. It's just nutty.
And that's all
shocking.
They wanted.
And so that's all they wanted.
Well, you are bringing a great service to people in America, because again, there's a lot of people, millions, up to 60 million would join a union if given the opportunity, if they knew that they wouldn't be harassed or coerced or be involved in a captive audience meeting. So got to check out the website, laborlab.us. And I want to appreciate what you've done on that website. It's a great website. Those of you listening right now, read about Section 7 and Section 8 of the National Labor Relations Act. A lot of people are not aware of their rights. And you spell them right out. It's real clear, Section 7 and Section 8. And I'll leave the rest up to our listening audience. So, Bob, thank you for what you do and continue to do. Please keep in touch with us, okay?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having us on, and thank you for bringing attention to workers' issues.
Certainly one guy to watch, Bob Funk, in charge of the Labor Lab out of Montana. Website is laborlab.us. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Phil Glover, on behalf of the American Federation of Government Employees, that would be District 3, covering Delaware and Philadelphia. He's coming up next.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
You're listening to America's Workforce, and this upcoming segment is brought to you by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. Check them out online at oft-aft.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And, of course, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency. Connecting people, always connecting people with employment. You can find more at ulagency.org. Let's go to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania right now, and joining us on line number two is Phil Glover. Phil is with the American Federation of Government Employees. He's a national vice president for District 3, and that covers Delaware and Pennsylvania. They have about 31,000 members, 53 locals. Phil, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Slash.
And what's going on in Pittsburgh? I guess there's a convention going on. Could you brief me real quick on that?
Yeah, I'm at the Pennsylvania State Federation of Labor Convention this week. We are working hard for labor out here, and we're getting ready to elect a new federation president, Rick Bloomingdale, who has just been a wonderful president and treasurer of the state Fed, is retiring. So we're out here looking at putting a new president in place.
So they got the next guy all lined up to take over the federation, I take it?
I think, you know, of course, elections, you never know what's going to happen in an election. But no, we think Frank Snyder will move up from the treasurer position to the president position.
I gotcha. Yeah, Rick's a good guy. He's been on the show many, many times. Super guy. Good to have him there. And we wish him well in retirement. All right. A couple things I want to get into. We're talking off the air about the transition from the Trump administration, and it wasn't very pretty, into the Biden administration, and there's apparently a lot of appointees on various boards dealing with, obviously, the federal workforce that are kind of causing some problems still. I don't know when their terms end, but Phil, can you give us some details of what seems to be going on right now?
Yeah, unfortunately, because you didn't have a normal transition, you know, when you have a president who doesn't believe that he lost the election, we ended up months into the Biden administration where they were not getting these boards and agencies set up with Biden's appointees. So additionally, what you had is some Trump appointees wouldn't leave. So we still have that. There's numerous agencies and boards that still have a number of Trump appointees on them, and they're mainly anti-union and anti-government. So we're struggling with that. We've been pushing forward to ask the administration to really try to get these folks out. In District 3, for instance, the Social Security Commissioner in Region 3 is still here from when Andrew Saul was the commissioner. So we're really trying to highlight those issues.
Now, can Biden do something? I mean, he took action, especially on the National Labor Relations Board on day one. And I know there was some pushback on that, but I know these are appointees from the previous administration. They have certain terms, but what are the rules and regulations on that?
Well, I think the last one that was an issue was the NLRB, and I think the courts came back and said he was allowed to remove those folks.
Right.
And at this point, you know, he did remove Andrew Saul, who was on a longer term as the Social Security Commissioner there in those 5-year terms, I think. But he had him removed. And so we're hoping they reach down into the lower portions of these agencies and start to take a look at embedded Trump appointees to try to get them removed and bring in the people that want to follow his labor relations agenda, because it's very much different. The Biden administration has come out with a number of initiatives with labor. And unfortunately, when you have these people down into the lower parts of the agencies, just, you know, mucking it up, then his agenda isn't getting followed.
Right. Well, sooner than later, and hopefully something can happen there. Let's talk about the VA, because it's my understanding, and this is something that happened in the previous administration. It's called the Mission Act, and they were pushing, and this has been going on for years, let's be honest. There's a number of people in Congress that think you have to privatize just about everything, and the VA, okay, nothing's perfect, let's be honest, but it is an incredibly good hospital system for our nation's vets, our heroes. And apparently, they want to close some, privatize some, do smaller clinics. And I understand in your territory, which is Pennsylvania and Delaware, they're actually talking about closing some of them. Phil, fill me in on what's going on there.
Yeah, the Mission Act in 18 created in that act was called the Ayers Commission on closures. Well, they didn't call it closures, obviously. They never want to just say it. However, it's a realignment study. It's similar to a Department of Defense BRAC way back in the day when they BRAC'd a bunch of Air Force and Army bases. So they recommended closures, at least in District 3 at Coatesville, for instance, out near Philadelphia, and the Philadelphia VA is possibly under closure, talking about moving it to a facility in Camden, New Jersey, across the river. And then a lot of changes to current VAs, for instance, Wilkes-Barre, which is the only VA up in that corner of the Northeast, would be... they would lose their inpatient care, they would lose their operating room, and the nursing home that's up there currently, they would push those veterans out to private care. And so those are all things that we've looked at. There's a lot more in this thing, but that is for what's called Vision 4, which covers PA and Delaware, the things that we're concerned about here in the district.
Now, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago with Daryl Bell. Now, Daryl is the president at Local 31 of the American mm-hmm. Federation of Government Employees. You know Daryl pretty well, don't you?
I know Daryl. Yeah, he's a really good local president out there in Cleveland.
You know, he was telling us that apparently this move is based on old data. Can you give me... a little more detail on that? I mean, we talked about it on the show. I'd like to get your perspective on that, because you would think if you're going to do something as drastic as this, you would have current data, not old data. Phil, I need some explaining here.
Yeah, they put this together based on number one, it's based on pre-COVID information. So you're talking 2019. Into 2020, and that's where the data comes from on these studies. And if you look at things now with COVID, what has happened is the VAs have become even more important. They've been used more by veterans, and even I think in Altoona, PA, where we have a hospital, we were even taking overflow at the time from the private health system. So they've become very important based on that, and I think there should be a lot of thought going into whether we really want to do this Ayers Commission or not.
So what's the timetable on this? Is there a push to make this happen or what?
Well, the problem in government is, you know, they'll lay out a time schedule in this thing. I think it's over a period of time, you know, maybe 5 years or more. The big problem is this, is that if you're going to close facilities, or at least say you are, what will start to happen is there'll be management in the lower sectors of government, and they will start to, I can take Coatesville as an example. Well, instead of bringing two new psychologists on, well, we're closing anyway. Let's just try to get by. Let's just try to get by. And that's what's going to start to happen here. There's all these managers that will start trying to get what I always call the gold star. and, you know, they want to be seen as really proactive, whether they're supposed to do it that way or not. And so we will start to have, and this has happened in the government for years. I've been around 31 years. So anytime that there are these plans like this, there are people that want to jump ahead so that they can, you know, show that they're doing the right thing, right?
Right.
And that's what, that is a big concern, that they will start to dwindle down services at some of these VAs, whether the actual action has happened yet or not. That's the other problem.
And the bottom line, if they get their way, won't the people that they're supposed to take care of in these VA hospitals and clinics, aren't they going to suffer because there's probably going to be less people around, right?
Well, I think that's the whole thing. They keep talking about, well, we'll privatize out the public sector. The problem is the public sector, I mean, I don't know about anybody else, but, you know, if you have a health issue right now and you go to get something looked at, you can wait 2-3 weeks. I mean, the VA is not much different than that. But add in all the veterans. If you add in all the veterans, think of the wait times.
Nope.
The other thing is funds. If you push things to private care, this came about years ago with John McCain. He wanted to give every veteran a credit card. Here, you go out. You can go to any place you want and get care. How do you budget a federal agency for that? I mean, I hate to say that, but it's, you know, if I'm a veteran, which I am, I go out to eye care 3 times, and then I go to the emergency room, and then I go somewhere else. That those bills come back into the VA. How are they supposed to budget any of that?
Right.
And that's going to be a problem. That happened with Choice, this Choice Act they tried to do a few years back, which has also kind of failed. They wanted to give veterans, well, you can go out here. We're going to send you out to the private sector. And what would happen is they would go out to the private sector. They would run out of money. They would send them back into the VA system, but they would put them back in the back of the line. And so the veterans were no better off. They were in the back of the line instead of where they would have been had they just been under VA care. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're real cognizant of that and we're concerned about it. And these are things that, you know, we look at every day.
Yeah. Yeah. Phil, it seems to me it's one of those situations. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And you got a VA system here. Obviously, nothing's perfect, but the system has been serving our vets for so many years. You would think that they would try to figure out ways to improve it, not to enter the politics into it and their spirals downward. All right, we got a couple of minutes left here. I just want to know, with all the changes, I mean, there's been some zigzag here with the previous administration, and you mentioned the Trump appointees. How's everybody holding up over there? How's morale in District 3, Phil?
Well, I know our local leaders, I have to give it all to them. I mean, the local presidents in my district have really stood up. Between the Trump executive orders to take away their rights and the pandemic and everything else, we've had very few that have left office. They've stuck it out. And so they've kept their locals organized, because obviously we're an open shop in the federal government. So they've had to keep organizing through this period. And they've done that. We've held our membership pretty well. And I just really think that you know, we see the light at the end of the tunnel, I guess, right now. But, you know, 2022 is coming. You don't know what's going to happen there. And then, of course, 2024. So we keep our eye on the ball out here. And we want to make sure that our members are safe and that they're working in places that they enjoy. We want them to have a good work life.
All right. Phil Glover, Vice President, District 3, American Federation of Government Employees, covering Delaware as well as Pennsylvania. I'll let you go back to your meetings over there in Pittsburgh. You take care, stay in touch, and stay strong, okay?
Thank you. It was good being on with you.
All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, LIUNA Local 1180 and the IBEW in the state of Mississippi. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.